The Spinoff Podcast Network.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
If you've already made one disgusting photo of me public, you can't make more like heinous events of that night.
That is not a disgusting photo.
It is so bad. You both look so good and I look so repellent.
You look fine. So great. In fact,
Screw you, Dan.
I wish you looked like that right now.
Oh my God.
Was this our dinner party fallout right here?
Yes, it's happening right now.
Welcome to The Real Pod. My name's Jane Yee. I'm joined by Duncan Grieve in the studio, and Alex Casey has got a case of the unwells.
Yeah.
She's not with us.
It's very sad.
I think we'll get to My Chemical Romance, but we did all go to My Chemical Romance over the weekend.
We really went to My Chemical Romance.
We really sent it, didn't we? And Alex had been threatening all night that she was going to vomit from excitement, and I just think this is a delayed reaction.
And it didn't even feel made up.
No. I was, like, keeping my distance.
Yeah. But even, like at the we had, like, a little pre-drink, a little pre at in my back garden, and she later looked jittery.
Yeah. Anyway, this is your reality TV recap podcast and pop culture in Aotearoa as well. We'll cover off a little bit of that being My Chemical Romance. Samuel is with us behind the desk. Kia ora, Samuel.
Kia ora.
You were also at MCR, I found out after the fact.
I was at MCR.
Did you have yourself a time? Did you enjoy it?
I loved it. Like, I know nothing of Goodnight Nurse, but they were awesome. The milkshake cover is legendary. And Gerard Way is so goddamn sexy.
He's such, like, he's old school God mode front man. Like, I can't really imagine another one manufactured like him for a band. Like, that's just not where the culture is.
And, like, the fact he was able to do that on the jet lag and they've been touring for so long and he's 45 years old.
They haven't done a show since October last year. So.
Oh, really?
But, you know, in the greatest scheme of life, they've been touring for so long.
Fact check.
I only know this because we were all busily checking setlist.fm. Yeah. and that cool old person way of preparing yourself for a gig these days. Anyway, I think we should cover this off in real news. In real news this week, we went to My Chemical Romance on the weekend, and it was a very real pot affair from start to finish. You look like you don't think it was.
No, it really was. It really was. Like, I was, like, acutely conscious that it was, like, you know, it was the best of times.
Yeah, me too.
And almost to a fault, like, you know, that sensation you sometimes have where you're struggling to experience the thing because you're trying to record it or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. And so often, you know, the best nights come out of a night you think it's not going to be that great, and the worst nights come out of a night you have so much anticipation and excitement for. But I was just going to – I was refusing – to let the latter happen. I was like, yes, I'm excited and I'm geared up and this is going to be a great night. And I don't want the curse of the great night anticipation. I'm just not going to let it happen. So it was one of those rare unicorn events where I was like, I was that excited and then it was a great night.
Absolutely delivered on every single piece of it.
And it was the first time I think the three of us went to a concert together.
I feel like it must have happened. We've been
to
a thruffle for a long, long time.
I know, but I don't feel like we've been to a concert. Anyway, We sat out, as you said, at your place, and that was a lovely time. It was very reserved, given that we're now all very, very old.
Well, and also everyone just seemed really, like, keyed up, you know? Like, with hindsight, there was just a lot of nervous energy pinging around, you know?
And we were just trying to act like life was normal, but it wasn't normal. So we were all covered in – well, we weren't all covered in eyeliner when we arrived. Most of us were. But then Duncan – you had your daughter come and give you a wee beauty treatment with a live audience.
Yeah, so Robin, my 13-year-old daughter, has become like a huge makeup obsessive, like does it multiple times every day. She's really good at it, I think. Not necessarily good at applying it to others, though, as it turned out. But also uses, like, the most industrial strength, cannot be seen, blasted off. It was like, I mean, I'm glad I did it because it seemed to mean a lot for her, and it certainly provided, like, more than enough entertainment for my friends and colleagues. But
I think she did a wonderful job. It was very, very funny watching it happen right in front of us, and your facials were brilliant. Don't worry, I documented the whole damn thing.
Well, there's a shot which you know, kindly and without consent put into the Real Pod Corner, which just has the, like, it looks like, you know, sometimes you see a shot of, like, the singer from, like, Twisted Sister or something with, like, two young fans who like Twisted Sister really, like, ironically. Like, it's just giving that in the worst way. I just look so washed up and tragic, and you and Alex look so young and vital and, like, I don't know.
Oh, that's so accurate. But, no, I think, but then we get there, right, and, like, everyone has gone to, I'm like, where have you emos been hiding for the last 18 years? Because it didn't look like people were dressed up for the show. It looked like people who dressed like this all the time were at the show.
It felt like emo mecca.
Yeah. Mm. It was, and I'm like, where are you? Are you hiding in culverts and sewers and just, like, come out for the show? Because I don't see you around the way that we used to.
But I wonder if, because it was, you know, the quintessential emo band playing here for the first time in a long time. But more than, like, and so as a result, I feel like it had enough gravity that it was sucking them from around the whole country.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it wasn't just,
it was a vortex.
Yeah. And I think that was the thing. Like, I was fretting, you know, as we all were, I'm sure, beforehand, you know, had outfit changes and all that. But you get there and you realize that one of the most beautiful things about emo as a culture, which I was always, like, basically a tourist in, you know, is that it is so phenomenally accepting. Like, it seems to have, like, quite intense rules and, you know, recall some of the sort of hardcore scene-y you're in or you're extremely out vibe of the 90s that we grew up in, Jane. But, like, the difference is, you know, it was just incredibly welcoming, it felt like.
Yeah, there were just, like, it's not like there was any one big thing that happened to make it a Real Pod evening. There was just, like, a whole load of pepperings of things, like, you know, we even down to, like, organising the car ride there. You know, I turned up with my 7-seater mum vehicle being like, I can take everyone, we can park at work and walk from there, it's all going to be fine. And then ultimately it ended up, like, two people in one car, two people in another, you and an Uber, like, for, I can't even bother getting into it. It blew it all up. But Chris Parker has done one of his, like, funny videos about people trying to organise car trips to and from places, you know, in a family situation. I was like, this is just exactly that. We are living this right now. Had it all planned. Blew it all up. It was all very rebellious of us, taking several cars. And then, like, parked at work, I thought it was such a genius idea, and just walked the whole way there passing empty parking spots.
They were really close parks along that route.
And then we get there and we walk in and they do the bag search and the woman pulls out my perfume. It's like, you can't take this in. I'm like, that is a very expensive bottle of perfume I was given by someone very special to me for my birthday. And she was like, you can't take it in. I was like, smell it. It's perfume. They also were dubious of my Eclipse Mints. I'm like, I'm a graying 44-year-old mother of three who doesn't drink. I'm not sneaking vodka via a perfume bottle into the gig.
So how did this play out?
she sort of eyed up her boss and he sort of gave a subtle nod, and they looked at me like I was the scum of the earth, like they like I was getting off a very serious murder charge.
I'm glad you carried it in. Well done.
And yeah, so then we get in. Me and Alex hit the, not, I wouldn't say the mosh pit, but we went in reasonably central, and then there was a flurry of exchanges via text as to where you were, all of those sorts of things, just classic gig stuff. I couldn't see a damn freaking thing, so I came out to the outer edges with you, and it was great.
It was just a perfect show.
And then
Good Night Nurse were amazing, and MCR were.
Yeah, and then we had, on the way out, I heard a couple of people saying something really funny. This guy was like, "We got to remember it's not Slayer." Like, these people aren't as angry as Slayer fans. They're like sad, not angry.
That's a really great distinction.
And also, there was the after party.
We did go to the after party just before then. I just do want to mention, got recognised by a couple of cronies, including Caitlin, who papped me and then was like, in classic. They were both within 30 seconds, and it was extremely cool. And it was very like, "I'm a corny and I'm sorry," and like, "I'm profusely sorry." But I'm like, it is such a joy and an honour to be recognised for our service in an environment like that. So please never.
No, never. Well, do apologise, because that's the calling
card. Yeah, that's the whole point.
That's the whole point. But I haven't had an "I'm a corny and I'm sorry" and I'm the only one.
Never?
Never.
I've had so many. You don't get out that much though.
I had one recently. I got recognised for the real pod. I downloaded Hinge, which is the new dating app. I've purposefully not told you guys this, but this
you
moment.
You have now.
Downloaded Hinge, my first ever match on that great app. First message, "Are you Sam that produces The Real Pod?"
Worth it.
Wow.
Worth it. And I obviously, you two are getting married now.
Oh, yeah, the next week. Okay. You guys, Duncan's officiating.
Fantastic.
That's right. I'm the Jesse of this whole situation.
That's amazing. Yes, please someone spot me out and say that to me. That would be really nice. It would just make me feel
better.
I feel
like you're also like the most recognisable.
Do you know, I was talking to...
You've been on...
God, I know, right? Treasure Island. I go to all these things and I'm like, oh, God, the onslaught.
You lived in LA once.
I lived in LA. The onslaught of people that are going to recognise me from Treasure Island. Do you know how many people have come up and said to me, "Hey, I loved you on Treasure Island, hated you," anything with the words Treasure Island in?
How many?
Exactly zero.
No!
Exactly zero. Apart from people I already know, like mums at school, that doesn't count. I haven't had a stranger come up to me and mention it at all.
What is with New Zealand?
I'm pleased and very disappointed. I did get a DM slide, though. I told you about
that's
that.
That's right. Yeah, I know. I've seen the grab.
Yeah, yeah.
So we went to the after party.
Yeah, so I was going to go home. Duncan promised, you know, words I heard were, "I've got us all on the door for the after party."
But look, this was a promise by proxy from Sharon Casey, who was...
Having a great time.
And look, it was a great time. I don't think it was an official after party so much as we all just showed up at Joel Little's studio.
Before him, I might add.
Well, before him.
I just think saying you're on the door implies, A, a door list.
Well, look, this is what I was told. I thought it was be an official thing in the actual downstairs venue.
The words after party... also very strongly imply, look, a party.
This is you're talking to the wrong, you know.
We walked into
the wrong man here.
A lounge type area like you would have almost in an ordinary home. There was sat a handful of people that we'd just been at the gig with. No sign of the band or the proprietor of the venue at all. No music, bright lights. It was a living nightmare, and all the while we're like, they're going to arrive here and be like, what the fuck? And that's exactly what happened, because I believe Joel Little knew we were going to be there. I don't think anyone else in his party knew that. And they all arrived before him. So they walked in, almost went to go sit down where we were sitting and went, oh, what the? And then proceeded in my time there to not mingle at all.
It was fine.
You were freaking out because your eyeliner, you felt in the cold light of day.
It was like sandpapering it off. It was pretty tough.
And Alex,
is this too long?
It's definitely too long.
Anyway, it was a lovely time.
I ended up having to leave because I got a call saying that my daughter was vomiting blood and I had to like leave the
final emo real pod, you know, because there's nothing more emo than vomiting blood.
Called the ambulance and they were like, this is not an emergency. She's had blood nose and she swallowed it and she's chucked it out. I was like, you are right. Thank you for your time. Goodbye. I'm so sorry. But yes, that's the real news.
Very real.
Very real. News. There were other things. There's so many other things, but, you know, that's the nuts and bolts of it. We have retreat week to get into, and that's a hell of a week, so we probably should just do that.
I think so.
I have 4 weeks to decide why I'm going to drop my entire life.
I am disgusted at how much you have copied my husband.
Did you just fart?
Reality check.
Before we got to retreat week, obviously we had a commitment ceremony.
We had a commitment ceremony.
Drama filled. Can I play a little bit of dialogue from one?
Oh, please do.
Because there was just something. It just really spoke to me. I've been trying to convince people that it's really important, but failing. But I'm going to play it anyway. Hopefully you get it.
She thinks you're insecure. How is that going
to
go?
Yeah, there's probably different ways to skin a cat there.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's that last exchange, you know, because so this is John talking to Cam about Cam's revelations around his really terrible mum's, thoughts about Lyndall. But Cam, in classic kind of low-key, 900 kilometres from civilization, says that there's probably, whatever it is.
More than one way
to skin a cat there. And then John comes in with a, yeah. And Cam, after thinking for a while, replies with, yeah. It's just such good dialogue. These two Aussie blokes saying, like, this is more of a guttural noises type situation than an actual words one.
I mean, I can't believe from all of this week's material that was what you were like, I'm going to grab that.
Well, also, like, it took me ages to properly pin it down. And Nikki was absolutely losing her mind at me over this really inconsequential thing. But there's something about that that just felt really Australian to me, and I didn't want to miss it. So you all understand. Jane doesn't understand.
I don't get it.
You all understand.
I think also it's interesting as well that, like, for almost everyone else, that's gone unresolved. Like, we don't actually get any real sense that Cam knows what to do going forward, but it was just in the for them that all happened.
Yeah.
I don't know, I'm not a dude and I can't do that sound that you're doing.
That's good stuff.
Okay, so at the commitment ceremony, aside from that groundbreaking audio you've just heard, Sandy and Dan leave, rightly so. What an absolute shit show it turned out to be between them.
Well, it was just good. The great thing, the big revelation this season is that the experts are actually doing some experting, and far more than I think at any previous season, they are holding the bad lads to account. Mm. And, we got to see a lot more of Dan's kind of, they're saying what to me face.
Mm.
And I think that is great for the audience. It's great in terms of an absolution for the women involved. And just generally, I think the show, for all that it is still intentionally creating these disastrous relationships, it has a little bit more integrity as a result.
It does, and I really noticed it in the edit with Harrison this week, because even in the voiceover artiste was basically saying Harrison's lies have got him exposed. You know, they're not being quite so like, we are the fly on the wall.
Yeah, the nature documentary
objective stuff
has gone a bit, they still have the tone of that. Yeah. But there is.
But they're leading the audience in what to believe a little bit more, which is, you know, much more accurate than we've seen prior. Okay, what else happened at the commitment ceremony? I think the only other thing of note really is that Taylor wanted to leave and Hugo, bless him, wanted to keep giving it another shot.
Yeah.
And
that's the whole thing. Saw the emergence of what would become a running theme over the course of the week, which is new expert just dropped and his name is Harrison.
Harrison is, he's lining up to be the next expert on the couch.
Who do you think he'd replace? Probably Alessandra, right? Because I think he's just powerfully sexual.
I think all of them.
You just go down to one. You save a bunch of cash.
Yeah, and you get obviously highly qualified expertise here, much experience with the ladies, and just all round nice guy. You know, wants the best for everyone.
He really does. The only issue you'd have is just how affected he is by, like, the plight of women, how emotional he gets.
Yeah.
So that's That's going to be tough.
Yeah, and it's going to be he's going to be very busy doing all his organisational and fundraising work for International Women's Day and so on, so he'll just have to figure out his commitments. Also, the other thing that was is kind of just a little bit of foreshadowing, I think, for the week ahead that happened in the commitment ceremony was this idea that Leighton and Melinda were putting on a bit of a facade with their relationship, that it's up and down. They present at the commitment ceremonies as a united front, but actually there's a little bit of...
Do you think... I mean, I thought they, you know, I mean, this was one of the big talking points of the week, but I like the fact that they have been relatively open, even on the couch, about the fact that, you know, not always easy for them. And, you know, Harrison, who's very comfortable just giving a version of reality that has no basis to anyone that we've ever witnessed and just sticking by it. It got found out in some really spectacular ways, but we'll get to that.
Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of Leighton and Melinda, they basically got on the couch and explained it. It's like we have this pattern where we have like a couple of bad days and it always comes right by the ceremony. So when we're sitting here, we are honestly in a good place. It made sense. I don't think they've ever proclaimed to be the blueprint for other couples in the same way that Bronte and Harrison did this week, said that they are what everyone else would be aspiring to. It's just
really
magic.
Amazing.
So we had retreat week.
Which is just a crack. Has there always been a retreat week?
I don't think there always has been, but there certainly has been for the last few seasons. It's difficult to look at that location and not hear, "It's not the best pizza party I've ever been to." It just rings in my ears. And when I see the lake, I think of Elle, you know.
Yeah.
There's a lot of happy memories at this place.
It's such a good location and a storied one for the Mass franchise.
There was a little self-awareness, I think, or calling back to previous seasons and just a reminder that these people don't exist in a vacuum. They have watched previous seasons when they make a play for that kind of little lodge back house that's like, That's the one that you want, and they all go sprinting in like top models trying to find the king size bed. And I think it was Evelyn and Melinda who become quite tight. Yeah, they got in there, but that fucking massive piano bed, it has literal ladders leaning against the bedside tables to get up on it. Why would you want that? You're gonna break an ankle.
And then Taylor and Hugo obviously sprinting to make sure they get the twin single room, the coveted twin single room.
Talo for Lover. I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spinoff. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spinoff member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
Let's get into each couple by couple. I mean, we'll start off with the ones where nothing really happened. They're just tracking along nicely, which is Ollie and Tani.
Just lovely.
Lovely. Rupert and Evelyn, slowly growing. Things are fine. He's coming out of his shell. Evelyn was quite a main player this week, but in other people's relationships, and again, just in the best way.
Yeah, she didn't have such a powerhouse week. I think Melinda, you know, took that sort of interrogating role. But there's been a little bit of development. They've seen each other naked, apparently, which is progress. I still don't know if I completely buy the relationship much as think that they get on fine and they're enjoying being on the show.
I don't think they're going to. I think if they make it to final vows, it's going to be,
yeah,
it was great. DM me. We'll catch up for coffee sometime.
That's
right. But Evelyn did, I think it's really interesting that Evelyn came into the experiment with Taylor and then had that blow up with Taylor. You know what I mean? Like, cause they were kind of quite friendly to begin with. But she's not at all costs sticking by Taylor when Taylor's being a dick. And Taylor is really being a dick.
Yeah.
Taylor, as we mentioned, wanted to leave. Hugo wanted to stay. She walked out of the commitment ceremony.
She walked out of the commitment ceremony, and this is another situation where if you were to only see what the experts saw at the dinner party, I think you could have been forgiven for thinking that there was fault on both sides kind of thing. So obviously the experts have a little bit more information than that because...
They must do.
Because Hugo... There's a lot of sympathy for Hugo, and Taylor... Oh, she's such an interesting character, right? Like, if you put together the worst of Taylor, you know, just a monstrous person, and yet she somehow both seems to be oblivious about that. Like it's almost like she's deleted those scenes, but also that Hugo somehow can't conjure it or characterize it, you know, in a way, you know, whether it's at a dinner party or on the couch, yeah. to the point where you're like, you've got the material. If you just articulated what's happened to you, there is nowhere for Taylor to hide. But because he keeps being unable to do it, she's able to kind of carry on this pretense of him being equally at fault or more so at fault. Mm. And it's quite frustrating, I find.
It's very frustrating. And I think the others find it frustrating because they can see it happening as well. I think he's a very kind person ultimately, and we see that when she goes back to Tassie and his only concern, despite everything she's done and despite her not even telling him that she was leaving, he still is like, well, I hope you can call her Claire and make sure that she's okay, and I hope that she's back with her family.
You buy that?
Do you think he's just gone all in on being the nice guy for the telly?
When that happened, I was like, this guy's very aware that he's got a camera on him.
Yeah. You're right. Interesting. Okay. I'm going to call you out on something in a little bit. Yeah. You and Alex, I believe you were wrong about something, and I feel like I have the evidence this week. I have the butt dial to prove it.
Great.
But it's not to do with these two, so I'll just hold that in. You can just look forward to that. But let's talk about the pound town, going to pound town on the daily.
Oh, the pound town on the daily, the sex bag, the sexting.
All while Hugo's sitting right there.
Brutal little exchange.
Just an absolute shocker. But then, of course, Claire whips out her fairy cards and is like, you know, gives Hugo just the confidence he needs to confront Taylor.
Confront is a
funny word to use because he really doesn't.
He really doesn't. It's just, I guess I find, like, the worst stuff Taylor has done, you know, around the you can never sleep in the bed.
Yeah.
You know, some of the things, you know, you're not a man.
You're not a real man. What I wanted was the exact opposite of you.
You know, all of the stuff, none of it feels recoverable. Like, it doesn't feel plausible that Hugo would have any confidence in, or like have any kind of even the faintest glimmer of hope. Mm. So when that the fairy book comes out, I'm sort of like, yeah, I don't know. Like, they're just, I don't know.
Well, he does confront her in his Hugo way and basically says, look, there's nothing to show that you're interested in this relationship. And she's like, well, Hugo, this is the biggest crock of shit. You've become so fragile over nothing. I'm so angry at you. She gets upset when he challenges her in front of everyone else because it makes her look like a bad person and he's throwing her under the bus. It's like, no, you actually really are worse than what he's saying.
So much worse. So he's rubbish at kind of making the case.
A complete lack of self-awareness on her part of how her behaviour is coming across. And yet she, you know, she gets very upset with him for being quite, like, sort of dancing around the edges of some of the very bad stuff that she said.
Is there any part of you that wonders whether she's just got a weird sense of humour?
Yeah, well, because she's constantly smiling, right? Like, she has this grin on her face, and it doesn't seem like she's taking any of this seriously at all.
So there's this part of me that wonders whether she does this kind of baiting stuff and then at other times does attempt to jolly it along. Like, she's just such a weird and specific, confusing character that I'm like, did she have like a savage edit? You know, what is, because, you know, obviously we're saying like 5 minutes a nip maybe, and yet it's 24 hours a day. Now, everything Hugo says implies that it is an accurate representation of their relationship, but sometimes her reaction is so, like, she's so affronted by it. You're like, how can this be? So just, I of all the relationships, this is the one I find most
baffling.
Yeah.
I think as well, there's almost a sense for me that she knows that she's saying nasty things and almost wants him to react. Like, she wants him to stand up for himself in a weird kind of, like, you know, she's mentioned, I want you to be a man. that that might be part of her wanting him to man. I'm not saying it's acceptable. It's definitely not a defensible thing to do. But you do kind of almost see her pushing the envelope further and further in the things that she'll say. Maybe she just actually wants him to call her out on it and see a little bit of fight in him.
But then even when he does, like he sort of does it in a kind of a like this foppish Hugo way. That
are
just,
we starting to sound like her?
Yeah.
This is terrible.
Let's move on.
Let's move on.
And look, they had their moments for the most part. That was just a bleak non-event couple.
We should also mention, though, that at one point she decides to just lay into Evelyn for standing there and having a face and telling her to fuck off, to which Evelyn wasn't having any of that, and it ultimately led to Taylor
storming off
and back to Tassie, apparently.
Just a brief Tassie detour.
When she came to the dinner party.
It was an incredible entrance.
It was an incredible entrance, but I also could tell from her footsteps it was her. Like, I could hear the footsteps, and I was like, it's Taylor. Taylor's back.
Yeah.
And that turned out to be nothing either. I mean, Hugo essentially just called it off. She was willing to hear his apology. He didn't really have one to give because he was like, well, it's over. We're not making it to final vows.
And there's nothing to apologise for.
Yeah. I think she wanted more time on the telly.
Yeah. wanted the drama. And, you know, there's a part of me that wishes we could just have a year-round mass pod, because I'd love to follow the cinematic universe in all its entirety and be like, what is going to happen to Taylor? Like, is this going to be a smash hit where she gets a big following, can launch whatever it is she plans to do, and this works for her? Or, you know, is she going to get home, watch the edit and go, oh, this is like a disaster? I don't know. I'm so curious.
I don't feel like she's going to get home and say, I think she's going to say, it's a disaster, it makes me look bad.
Right.
I don't think she's going to be like, oh, wow, I behaved poorly.
Right.
That's my read. Do you think that she went back to Tassie for a bit of Pound Town before returning to the dinner party?
I had not considered that.
But, you know, possibility. Yeah.
Definitely a
possibility. Because she's very sexual, apparently.
Well, just not with Hugo.
Just not with Hugo. Literally everything, just not with Hugo.
Yeah.
Because, you know, even the other couples noticed that she was very friendly with everyone else, sort of friendly, affectionate with people, other fellas, other husbands. A very big, long parting hug with our dear friend Cam.
Who chased her. There was a little bit of, like, could there be some kind of issue here for like a hot minute there, but
I'm concerned.
Really?
That those two
post show,
or that there's going to be, even though they're not returning to the show, that maybe, did we see any of them in the pre for the couch sessions?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, I still.
I've been concerned too.
I still feel like maybe it's not the last we've seen of Taylor. Like, she's gonna, you know, just intrude of her own accord back in the experiment because she wants the husband she didn't get.
Well, they do that like complete reunion thing right before the end, right?
Yeah.
Where everyone comes
it's
back.
It's true.
So.
And they watch the tapes sometimes.
Can't wait.
It's gonna be so good. This has been such a great season.
Yeah. Again, pre-mourning the end of this too.
Yeah. Okay, Duncan and Alyssa, we're starting to see the wheels come off a little bit. I don't know how long this can go on. They need to right the ship pretty quickly before it gets capsized.
Well, what's your take on this? Like, who do you sort of side with if you side with anyone?
I side with Duncan.
Okay, good.
Because...
Same.
Yeah. I think... I can understand where Alyssa's coming from. The only reason I can understand it is because I have been that person. But I've been that person with people who would never address it the way that Duncan has. So I've been needy and felt left out and da-da-da. He comes along and is like, the only bad thing he said was like, I'm sorry you felt that way.
And I think that...
But so, I think that's excusable in this instance.
Exactly. Like sometimes the... I think that, like, the kind of there is a sort of an internet thing where that kind of bad apology formulation is taken to be read as just like a pure insincerity. When if it's wrapped in a whole bunch of you saying the right thing, it just means that you don't really know how to structure the sentence for an apology.
Like you could tell he was genuinely sorry that she was upset and that he was the cause of it. It wasn't. That was my read on it. And maybe poor choice of words, but as you say, it's only a poor choice of words because it's become this sort of phenomenon that you don't say, I'm sorry, you feel.
Yeah.
In a way to divert responsibility to that person rather than whoever it is.
Owning it for yourself. Precisely.
I believe he was owning it.
Yeah.
I believe that was the intention of what he was trying to say. But regardless, he then was like, you want reassurance? Here's all the reassurance in the world. I want to be part of this with you afterwards. I want this to go all the way. I'm fully committed. I'm sorry I didn't give you attention today. I will give you all the attention tomorrow. Can I hug you now? Will that help? All of these things that I'm like, my God, if someone was saying this shit to me when I was throwing a little bit of a tanty because they hadn't checked in with me all day because they were hanging out with the boys, I would be like, let's renew our vows right this second. Like, let's cut to the chase.
Yeah.
So she's obviously got something, I don't know if it's past experience stuff. I do think, to your point about Taylor and her edit, I think Alyssa, there's a little bit of it as well, potentially. The frankenbiting that has been going on.
It's worse than ever.
The frankenbiting is
so all over the place, right?
Yeah.
I do wonder with Alyssa, like, because we've got to this point and it feels like there's been quite a stark and known division. The last kind of mask off person was Dan.
Mm.
And since then, basically, you're either a goodie or a baddie. There's a part of me that wonders if there's one last shoe to drop.
Yeah.
And it might be Alyssa going a little bit Olivia on it.
Yeah. Because that was a huge mask drop in that season, wasn't it?
Well, she you know, that her and
Jackson.
Her and Jackson, that's good stuff. You know, we're actually like the model couple for a long time. Mm. And then we just had no idea. So, I mean, I'm not saying that Alyssa has that in her, but there's just a little kind of spidey sense that maybe there's something more coming there.
Yeah. Edit-wise, though, I feel like the bit where she's like, give me more attention, I want more attention, almost sounded like it could have come from a sentence that began with, I don't want to be sounding like,
totally.
Just the way that it was edited. But maybe not. But we can only judge on what we see because that's all that we're given when we do acknowledge that perhaps there's some context missing. But from what we see, it looks like she was being pretty unreasonable.
And so often with the Frankenbites, they play the audio over some, you know, not you don't see them saying it. So it could even be from an in the moment, you know, like this just could be anywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
They're just making a show, and it's entertaining, and we need to understand that very little of it could. Yeah, there's so much of it that might not be reality.
They have a girls' dinner, boys' dinner situation going on this evening, and she reveals to everyone that Duncan's not her type. Again, I feel like maybe that's out of context. It may have very well been followed by not usually my type, but I really like him.
But I do feel like everyone's reaction, like, sort of, what? Like,
yeah, that's true. And that was obviously the entire watching population's reaction also, because he's a universal type. There's very few men that actually are. He's a universal.
Yeah.
He's like, is it the O blood group that can give to everyone? That's Duncan.
Yeah.
So we're all gobsmacked by that. But she'd also just come off the back of having a little tanty with him, and I think that that's part of
her defence mechanism.
Yeah, yeah. And they do that amazing edit between her version of events and his version of events, right down to where she's like, you know, and then he was like, well, I'm sorry you feel that way. And he's like, and then I told her, you know, I feel really bad about it. Like, the way you put a tone on something really makes a difference.
It really does.
And then we have, we'll do Claire and Jess there because I feel like we should save that big mess of four piece till last.
Yeah.
Claire and Jess are going so well, like couldn't be going better. They head to the retreat and share a bed for the first time in ages. Like, they're not rushing anything. It seems like they've paced everything really well and being really respectful of each other.
Jessie's
running around.
Really naked.
So naked and turned around to the girls and took his hand away. Is that okay? I mean,
it definitely isn't in most contexts, but for some reason in that moment it felt just sweet and long. I don't know why. Like, if it had been Harrison doing it, we'd have been calling the police.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But Jesse seemed fine. I don't know. I don't make the rules.
No, I mean, again, we're just watching a documentary here. So everything, the retreat, you know, they're solid as they, you know, they have everything about their time together at the retreat is pretty much lovely. Claire does a great job of calling some people out on their bullshit. And she handles things really, really well. It always does have that air of, I'm telling you because I'm concerned for you.
Yeah, and it feels genuine.
And it's like when she uses the word babe, it's affectionate and not like, okay, babe, you know. She's
not sneering.
She's not sneering. But then, of course,
dinner party.
And Harrison's realised he's not going to be able to blow up Melinda and Leighton in the way that he'd hoped, which we'll get to. But he's going to have a go at Jesse and Claire.
And you know, like, he's successful.
It's like alarmingly successful.
And given, notwithstanding all of the terrible things about Harrison, you know, and this was horrible behaviour because he was just there was no function to what he was saying apart from to undermine their relationship and to strike it at a most vulnerable point. What he said, had you wondered it?
No.
Really?
I really believed Claire.
I did too, but I do think that she has affection for him, but I also don't think it's out of the question that she wrote Stay and that the thrust of that, you know, romance, squash and metal guitar riffs week was urgent image rehabilitation,
right,
given that she was going to be that year's cheating scandal.
I think the season's not over yet, Duncan. I think the thing that we seem to forget as a collective around the dinner table and on the couch and so on when we talk about this cheating scandal, which was not okay, but we seem to have forgotten that Jesse wasn't this Jesse back then, and their relationship, like, I am certain she thought that they were both going home at the next commitment ceremony because he was really awful to her.
Yeah, he was. He was a nightmare.
He was awful, awful. And there is some context when he said, you know, the real world is what happened with you and Adam that night. And I, you know, we were 3 weeks in and I wasn't like getting anything like that from you. It's like, because you were being a fuckwit to her, truthfully, you were.
But there was also some element of what he was saying that wasn't actually judging her at all. It was like, there isn't that kind of electric physical connection between us.
But I also don't feel she's in a position to be able to be particularly forward because he's choosing to sleep in another apartment. You know, I think they need to have a conversation about where they are at physically.
Yeah, I just don't think it's happening.
Mm. Interesting.
And he knows, and Harrison is casting about for some chaos to cause, and he's found some.
I still feel like her intentions are genuine. I think maybe you're right. Maybe they don't and will not get that physical connection.
I think she cares about him immensely.
Yeah.
I absolutely believe that, but I just don't think that's the same as, you know, believes this marriage to be anything more than a TV friendship.
What he said made me wonder if he had tried to make moves on her and it hadn't.
Yeah.
You know? We haven't seen or heard of anything like that in particular, but it did vibe that way, that he's, you know, there's something more that we haven't seen between them, that maybe he just can sense that she's, you know, she's fine for a hug, but anything beyond that, no thank you.
Correct.
What do you think's going to happen on the couch? Are they going to go home?
No, I don't. I think they've come this far, and you know that there will be some triaging post the dinner party that allows it to be a sort of a strained continue. Mm. I mean, yeah, I don't think that a couple of hours is enough to derail what had previously been a pretty good run.
Okay. Then we get on to, I think that's everyone, eh?
No, we haven't done Lyndall and Cam.
Oh, Lyndall and Cam. What's to do here?
I mean, just Cam got his hair down.
Yeah. Thought he was the man. I mean, I prefer it up, honestly.
I kind of liked it.
Yeah. Well, different strokes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But yeah, there was very little to say about the pair of them.
Melinda Lake and Harrison Bronte. I feel like in a weird other world, these guys could all be like couple friends.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Totally agree.
I don't know why. They look like they would be, the four of them together would be like a tight four, but that's not the case. So as mentioned earlier, we started off the week with Bronte and Harrison claiming to be the blueprint for future couples of how they can turn around a bad relationship to be the most amazing relationship thanks to hot sex. It's just weird that this is their arc, given the whole like first 2 weeks was about some weird sex experience that was so awful that we don't really know enough about.
Yeah, there's something really despicable about hearing Harrison talk about sex at all. Like,
yeah.
He's just got really, really appalling vibes in that respect.
They also tried to recreate the butt dial, like went to the bar, tried to prove that there's no way it could have happened, Your Honour, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Mark Lundy couldn't have driven that distance in that time. And I think the thing with the butt dial that we never really got to the bottom of is, like, yes, apparently they were out, but we don't know that the butt dial occurred in the Loud Club. It could have been outside. They could have been out having a vape, as we know that everyone seems to be want to do. Like, there's a lot of corroborating information missing here. I think the butt dial happened. I also think that Rupert filled in heaps of gaps.
Yeah, agree.
Bronte and Harrison think that Rupert just went home and told Evelyn everything, and that they came up with this butt dial story. I don't feel like they're the kind of people that would need to do that. I feel like Evelyn would just be like, Rupert came home and told me this happened.
Yeah, absolutely. But also, I think just fundamentally, Harrison doesn't actually not believe it. Like, Harrison's belief system is whatever is convenient for him at that precise moment.
Yeah.
So he is aware that he can sort of plausibly question this thing and that it upsets Evelyn.
Yeah.
And he just likes to be this kind of provocative
guy. He does.
Guy.
And also it does double duty, because it also convinces Bronte. He does manage to convince Bronte in the process, you know, that what he's saying is the Lord's truth.
Yeah.
And this is where I come for you and Alex. I'm not coming for you. That's true. Okay. This is where I confront you. Last week or the week before, I was saying that I think that she's fallen for a hook, line, and sinker. And you guys were like, no, she just wants to be on the telly. She sees right through Harrison.
No, I don't think.
I think you did.
I don't think we said sees right through. but like, I think that she stuck around and sort of gave it what she gave it because she was on the telly.
I maintain that she really wanted. I think there was
You had a lot of wins this week.
The element of being on the telly, I think, that she did want was she wanted to have a successful relationship on the telly. I don't think it was just that she wanted to be on the telly for her makeup course, online courses.
Online?
But.
Makeup course?
I don't think she wanted that necessarily to be her narrative, but I think she wanted a relationship with him. I do believe that. I believe that she fell for his lies. I think we saw heaps of evidence of that.
I mean, he is a very studied emotional manipulator. Like, he's not. Sometimes, like Shannon, for example, absolute monster. But where he was emotionally manipulative, it felt like a result of him stumbling around in the dark of human emotions. Whereas Harrison, it is very deliberate.
It's very, very experienced.
He uses all the techniques. I feel like he's studied, like, pickup artistry manuals. He knows what it is to do.
Yeah. And, yeah, I 100% agree with that analysis. He is the most dangerous kind of person, you know?
Yeah.
And we see that. Yeah, it's awful to say that someone so gross is so skilled, but he is super skilled at, like, making conversations, talking in riddles. Like, we've seen Lance Savali do that on Treasure Island in a wonderful way, and this is what, you know.
This is
the dark side of that, when someone can kind of, you can't argue with them. You just can't.
Yeah. So, okay, so there's a few kind of key beats we've got to get to before I have to go to a meeting.
Oh, my God. There's the eavesdropping.
The eavesdropping, which I think, especially in light of how contrived the butt dialing had been, I can, A, imagine how, when you've had a few glasses of wine, it would be the most fun thing in the world to go and eavesdrop.
Same.
and B, think it was not the right thing to do.
I know, totally. Totally. And actually what they over, I was expecting it to be like huge bomb drops, like I can't stand, you know, like more of that butt dial stuff. But what it actually was that they overheard was Harrison doing predictably what Harrison does.
Saying what Harrison says in public.
Which is, yeah, essentially, you know, late in your relationship isn't what it seems. We unfortunately, Melinda and Evelyn left that conversation before they heard Leighton saying, well, I disagree with you, my relationship's good. So they didn't get to hear Leighton defending their relationship.
But amazing, amazing. Because in the aftermath where Harrison says to Bronte that Leighton admitted that the relationship was in trouble, like that is like an absolute out-and-out lie that he was caught in, but actually did its job, you know? Like, yeah. Melinda and Leighton had a real proper blow-up
over it.
They did,
but there was, thankfully, they managed to come together again, and Leighton started to see that it didn't quite add up and that he was to support Melinda. And so then when they went to the final night of drinks, they were a united front.
But there was that little exchange where there's the four of them, and basically, like, they discover it, and Bronte seemingly, like, basically says right outright that that Harrison said that, and then he sort of makes this kind of out the side of his mouth comment about how she shouldn't have done that, and then she kind of resiles from it, apologizes, and like that's where you suddenly say, oh, this mind control thing is real,
and that's where, that's where you see the skill, because he doesn't just get cross with her, he does a really quiet whisper and sandwiches it between, like, I've got your back and I support you, but I wish you hadn't done that. But I am here for you. So the important thing that he's getting across, he's doing so surrounded by things he knows will speak to what she wants to hear, the I've got your back, I'm here for you. But the main takeaway here is you've fucked up and you've exposed me.
And she seems to go away from that thinking that she's erred.
Yes.
Which is quite extraordinary. Again, speaks to the master manipulator thesis.
Which is why I believe that she truly is kind of wanting it to work between them.
Yeah, I think you've I agree.
Not guilty, Your Honour. So I think the interesting thing with that exchange, of course, was that Bronte was the one who outed him. By accident, truly by accident, because she believed what he'd said. She believed that when he said to her, oh, Leighton says his relationship with Mel is toxic and that it's in trouble and it's not moving forward. So she kind of had, like, the pair of them had been quite smug about that, both Bronte and Harrison, about the fact that they knew that this other relationship was in trouble and these were people who had previously questioned their relationship. So they were quite stoked to be able to go in there and stir the pot a bit, but Harrison never counted on Bronte repeating word for word his version of events. And then, she fell on the sword, was like, oh, I must have misheard it. What then transpired, we didn't mention Leighton's pants.
Yeah.
I mean, that was something.
You're talking about the flesh-coloured pants.
I'm talking about the flesh-coloured pants. That truly looked like he had no pants on in an extreme meme way.
It's really interesting, the pants situation for men in Australia right now, insofar as if what we see on Married at First Sight Australia is the current, you know, approach, that is a microclimate. Like, that is really different to what is happening anywhere in this country or anywhere else in the world, as far as I'm aware.
I feel like it's always been that way, though. When you think about, like, the Australian rock scene has such a look that, like, you can look at a lineup of rock bands and be like, that's the Australian one at any given time. In the history of music.
But, I mean, like, look, because Harrison wears those absolutely shredded jeans.
Like, how does he get his feet through? Like,
and they wear, like, baggy, sort of normal-seeming tops, but it's just like you must wear painted-on
jeans. I know.
Jeans.
It just does really odd things for their...
But because they're all very, like, muscular
it
guys.
It makes them look, like, top-heavy, right? Like, not top-heavy, you know, just sort of disproportionately. It's bizarre.
It's a really rough old look.
Yeah. Anyway, that wasn't what I was actually going to say.
It's important to note.
But what happened out the back of that whole exchange between the four of them is that Bronte basically addressed the group saying, do you all think that our relationship's fake? Everyone does. Only a couple of people put their hand up. But it was enough for the seed of doubt to be planted.
It's a very Milky Bar kid, I'm coming down to kind of situation. Yeah. Like,
it's not Milky Bar, that's Pixie Caramel?
No, it is Milky Bar.
I'm The one where they're all like...
Oh, no, it's Crunchy Nut Cornflakes, is it?
It's Crunchy Nut Cornflakes.
Yeah.
It is, yeah, it is. The cop's eating it in the car, yeah. Anyway, that was nice. Very few people are going to understand what we're talking about there, but if you do, that's really, just a little nugget for you.
Real cornies of a certain age.
Literal.
Cornflakes.
Wow. Anyway, apparently they go home, have a wee, bust up, and he breaks up with her via text message because he can't trust her anymore.
Which is so wild.
At every aspect. And he I don't truly think he believes he's the victim. He knows he's a fuckwit.
Well, he was just looking for, like, I think basically he wanted to stay on the show. He wanted, like, he wanted his version of redemption. He absolutely wants to leave this single and just gorge
on he does.
His fame. So he was just like, okay, where's the nearest out for me? And it's the most, like, despicably non- anything, and he's just like brazens it out. It's like, yeah, I couldn't trust. It's like unbelievable. Like,
his fake crying as well.
His fake crying.
And Ollie calling him out on it, or not in person because Ollie's too scared to do that, but certainly in the moments is so true. Like, never, he goes red from not from being upset, he goes red from the pressure of trying to force a tear from his eye, and he simply cannot do
it.
That's
absolutely what does not happen. I mean, never has someone who's such an incompetent actor spent so much time acting and being so convinced of how compelling they are. Like, it's
the
just
cutaways to the rest of the cast every time he does this, everyone's just going, oh, fucking, are you serious,
it's
mate?
It's quite a weird situation, right? Like, the idea of having, like, this sort of seemingly grown-up man doing, like, appallingly useless fake crying in front of you, and you just sort of have to sit there dutifully pretending like it's real.
But
like, one can even be bothered. This is like the 10th time it's happened.
But we've all been there, right? Like, when, say, your kid's faking being sick to get out of school, but you're worried that you'll send them and then they'll vomit, right? It's that kind of thing where you're like, I know you're lying. I know you're being fake. I know you're not really upset, Harrison, but I don't want to be the person who's like, your feelings aren't real, you know? So they just kind of, like, they keep
shitting. Yeah, you know, you are, like, in a bit of a bind in 2023 that, like, pretending that you can't directly call them out, but there's just the quizzical looks. They're a supercut of all of Harrison's emotions would be a thing to behold.
And that's us. We wait to see what happens on the couch. I honestly am terrified that Bronte and Harrison are going to stick around.
Well, it only takes one, right?
Yeah, it only takes one. And also, it sounded to me like this was all part of the performance, because at the beginning when they had the little meet-up on the couch before the dinner party and he wanted to go in as a united front, he almost said something to the effect of, like, you know, talking about the commitment ceremony and that perhaps they could work things out or something. So
yeah.
I just think the whole thing got a little bit out of control for him, and he had to just sort of stick with this because he couldn't turn her around. He had to stick with this we're breaking up thing. But I think when he broke up with her, it was all just part of the game, and that it was part of the stringing her along, making her want him even more.
He just feels like such a dangerous creature.
He's a living nightmare. Lock him up now. And that's our podcast for the week. Thanks for joining us. Get well soon, Alex. Thank you, Samuel. Thanks to the Spinoff members. Please donate to the Spinoff members.
Yeah. If you like The Real Pod.
And you do.
Yeah, if you're still here, you really do.
Yeah.
Please do it.
Yeah. We need it. We actually do, just quietly. Actually, no. All right. Thank you all. Goodbye. See you next week.
Kia ora e te iwi. Te Aihe Butler here, podcast manager at the Spinoff. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spinoff member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
The Spinoff Podcast Network.